Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Sort of. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so so my name's Ed Stetzer, and we're going to... No pictures. So. I'm just kidding. So we're going to talk some about church multiplication. I'll in the main session, I'll talk a little bit about some research. So I'm going to give you a couple of references to kind of previews, if you will, about how do we get to a greater sense of movement in multiplication in the church. A couple of reasons why I think this is important. We live in an age and an era where church planting is on the increase, but movemental church planting still is an elusive possibility. Now, we've seen movemental church planting in some of our lifetime, and we've seen movemental church planting in the geography where we are right now. Matter of fact, it was in the late 60s, early 70s, a guy named Chuck Smith got together with some hippies. He was at a four-square church at the time. This Jesus movement was not just, I mean, the Jesus movement has made significant impact on a lot of different denominational traditions. But what became different about Calvary Chapel, and then subsequently someone who's influenced by the Calvary Chapel, a guy named John Wimber, just down the road in a place called Anaheim, at the Anaheim Vineyard, on Mother's Day 1980, a guy named Lonnie Frisbee showed up. He also helped start Chuck Smith start the Bible study he started. And they would describe this supernatural outpouring of the Spirit. It's actually in the video age, so you can actually watch the Mother's Day 1980 video online. And so what happens is these two movements are birthed in Southern California, and they have really global impact, right? They have global impact. Let me give you a couple of examples. So let's take a denomination. We mentioned Converge Worldwide, for example. So Converge Worldwide is a denomination, I think 1,800 churches, if my memory serves me correctly, please forgive me if I'm wrong. But when you add up the Calvary Chapel and the Vineyard, which were not part of the Swedish dissenting movement, which did not have hundreds of years of history, both in Europe and here, when you take Calvary Chapel and the Vineyard and again, they're kind of diverged over the years, but if you take them and put them together, they're the size of Converge Worldwide after two centuries. And so in just a matter of decades, we've seen an explosion. For example, the Wesleyan Church, I know we had Nazarenes here, but the Wesleyan Church, Dwayne Lyons, the general superintendent, is about the same size as Calvary Chapel when you compare the two. And so the Wesleyan Church been around for 140, 150 years. So we see some movemental energy, some rapid church planting. And so what we've talked about and wanted to look into is, what are some of the characteristics, what are some of the habits that lead to this kind of multiplication? And so how can we facilitate that so we can see more, not less? Now, I did this past Sunday. I won't tell too much of this. I'm going to talk about it in my session in there. I preached the 20th anniversary of a church I planted in Erie, Pennsylvania, and it was fascinating to be back there. And then I drove around and I went to some of the daughter churches that we had planted and seen some of the churches that they had planted. And I thought to myself, I was pleased what the Lord had done, but at the same time, we hadn't broken forth in the movement. So how come sometimes there's a movement and sometimes they're not? Well, sometimes there's a movement because there are no factors where God is working and there's what we might call outpouring, an awakening, or a revival, right? So the last time we had a true church planting movement, the way a well-known missiologist named David Garrison defines it, which is a rapid reproducing movement of indigenous churches within a given population group or people segment, the last time we had that on the soil that is the United States, it was from 1795 to 1810. That's a long time ago. Now, I can take you right now to places around the world. Since we're recording this, I won't mention some of them, but some of them in closed access countries where right now there is a church planting movement. Some in our hemisphere, which in a closed access country in our hemisphere, which I guess gives it away since there's one, but in that nation, there's one or two verified and verifiable church planting movements. So all around the world, we have these church planting movements. People write books about them, right? And the reason they write books about them is because we want to emulate them. Now, we have to go back 1795 to 1810, and that movement was among two groups. One was the Methodists, what would subsequently be, the United Methodists most largely. Any United Methodists here today? Okay, good. So you heard me mention Path One, and so you're probably involved in that. And so the Methodists and the Baptists, now this is before there were denominational separation, it was just kind of generally Baptists, and so you had the Methodists and the Baptists, and they planted 3,000 churches in a span of 15 years on the western frontier. That's Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Right, so right where your headquarters is, if your denomination was in the middle of this church planting movement. But since that time, we haven't seen that kind of explosion of church planting. We've seen some outbreaks, right? We've seen Pentecostals coming out of Azusa. We're not that far from here, coming out of Azusa. By the way, Southern California has a disproportionate influence on global Christianity. As a matter of fact, a way that's hard to actually overstate when you think about all the things that have come out of Southern California. The whole Pentecostal movement, which is the fastest growing movement in the history of global Christianity, started not far from here. Of course, some people would debate, say it started in Topeka, Kansas, or other places. But most would say here. So what happens? So you see some outbreaks, right? So in coming out of Azusa and into the 20s, and this Pentecostal outbreak that was here in the 50s, kind of the healing revivals, and it led to some church planting. And the 70s and 80s with Vineyard and Calvary Chapel and Hope Bible Churches and some others. But why then do we not see that kind of movemental Christianity today? Now, there's a lot of reasons, but what we've done is we've done some research, and I'm going to present some of the research. And let me just encourage you to go to newchurches.com, and you can download the report. It's free. The website's right there. And we're going to continue to put out more parts of this as we go, because it's not actually all released. I'm releasing some data today, but if you'll kind of follow with us, we're going to unpack it there. We have a series of denominations, I think 11, 12 denominations that sponsored it. And so I got to give it to them in November, and then we'll continue to unpack the data at newchurches.com. But let me see some things we've seen that I want to have directly applicable to you that can speak to how do we increase church planting reproduction. Right, a couple things. So we're going to start with the idea of multiplying everything. I was actually speaking at the Wesleyan, go to the next slide, Daniel, multiply everything I think is the headline of that. I was speaking at the Wesleyan National Meeting, it's called the Gathering. The Wesleyan, the denomination, not the movement. And at that meeting, I was supposed to speak on multiplying churches, and they said beforehand, the Phil Stevenson, who's now up in Sacramento, I believe, said, what should talk not just on multiplying churches, but on multiplying everything. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, we need to multiply disciples, groups, ministries, and churches. And I fell in love with that. I stole it. I wrote about it in the book, didn't give him credit. And here's why I think that matters. We need to multiply everything. And so if you're going to have a culture of multiplication, right? So let's take People's Church, right? Because I'm a fan and a friend, right? So People's Church, if the first thing we hear is, oh, okay, we're going to start a new church, and we've got this established campus to maintain, we've got this legacy to kind of preserve, and the first thing we hear is we're going to send away a couple hundred people to start a new church, that may be such a shock to the system that it has a negative perception. But if we teach multiplication is a core value of healthy organisms and organizations, and we're multiplying disciples and groups and ministries and churches, and now we might even say campuses, depending upon if that's part of your strategy, we've created, are you ready? We've created a culture of reproduction. Now, I want you to hear this. I don't want you to miss this. The necessity is to have a culture of reproduction. Okay, so I think here we go. So what that means is people are accustomed to the idea that they're not supposed to grow by addition, but they're supposed to grow by reproduction. Now again, if your church has Sunday school classes, you can think that somebody along the way, a very famous Sunday school guy years ago, his name was Arthur Flake, talked about Flake's formula. He said you gotta multiply classes, and what happens is rookies call that you gotta divide classes. We don't divide anything in a church. We multiply everything in a church. It's the same thing, but it sounds happier. So we multiply small groups. People are accustomed to that. We speak about multiplying disciples. People are accustomed to that. We multiply ministries. People are accustomed to that. And then we multiply churches. Now, here's the challenge. The natural tendency is multiply. I'll tell you in just a little bit that I'm going to show you. Don't tweet this, because we're gonna do it in the main session in just a minute. Is that we were very disappointed at the reproduction rate of churches over 5 years. Among new churches, only 1 out of 5 actually plants a daughter church within 5 years. So don't, and again, hold on to that thought. But what happens is the natural order of things is that upon starting, we become about preserving. And we see this in the New Testament, right? Let's compare Antioch versus Jerusalem. Antioch versus Jerusalem. So in the Antioch church, we know a few things, right? They were first called Christians at Antioch, and that's good. But Antioch becomes the great sending church. Now, here's the thing that I want you to miss, is that Jerusalem, we have no record of anybody being sent out of Jerusalem for the purpose of mission, evangelism, or church planting in the New Testament. What we have is record. People were sent from Jerusalem to check up and make sure that people weren't doing anything bad in the other churches. So when someone from Jerusalem came up, it was like someone from your mom, you know, coming to check up, make sure you're doing things. So the people from Jerusalem would come to check up and make sure you're doing it okay. Now, here's the deal. Most of our denominations here have a whole lot of churches that are Jerusalem churches, and they're there to kind of make sure that people aren't getting too crazy or too out there or whatever, when they have very few Antioch churches. I was hoping that I'd see a lot more Antioch churches among church plants, but even there, it was, I mean, certainly higher than the percentage as a whole. But what we've got to do is, if we're going to see a movement, I want you to hear this. If you're going to see a movement, it's generally not going to be with established churches suddenly getting a passion for church planting. Now, please, don't be discouraged, right? If you're a PCUSA leader or you're LCMS leaders, don't be discouraged in thinking that that doesn't mean you can't get churches involved in church planting at a higher level. You can. Your church can become a key place of planting new churches if it gets an Antioch mentality rather than a Jerusalem mentality. A Jerusalem mentality is a preservationist mentality. It's a check up on others. It's always being concerned that people are doing things right. An Antioch mentality is, what do we need to do to get the mission done? So it says, while they were praying and fasting, the Lord spoke to them, and they sent out Barnabas and Saul, later Paul and Barnabas. And so what I want you to see is, what I'm trying to talk about is a culture of multiplication that's evident in all stages of church life, including in your life. Now, let me give you an example. I'm guessing most of you heard of Bill. How many of you have heard of Bill Hybels? I know you're not hand raisers, but how many of you heard? Okay. How many of you heard of Bill Hybels' sailboat? Raise your hand if you heard of Bill Hybels. Now, why? That's a weird thing. Why would you hear of Bill Hybels' sailboat? Because Bill Hybels uses his sailboat as an object lesson for something he values deeply. Bill Hybels values sailing, but he values evangelism. And so when you hear Bill Hybels talk about his sailboat, you always talk about how he's, you're nodding your heads, you know what I'm talking about, how he's evangelizing the members of his team. He's creating a culture of value in his church and holding it up with an example. The same thing needs to be true for us if we want to move to a higher level of church multiplication. We have to hold up a cultural value and continue to hammer it over and over again with examples. Now, let me give you an example. So I planted a church 3 years ago where I live. We did it with a team. I'm the lead pastor, but I preach 3 out of 4 Sundays. I'm a volunteer. I don't get paid by the church. It's kind of a weird arrangement. So very few things I do or can do, because I got about 10 hours a week to volunteer at the church. But one of the things we tried to do from the beginning to say, we're going to plant churches. We're going to be doing that early and often. Now, we've had the privilege now of having two people who have come out of our church as elders. In our polity, you sort of go through a process of elders, pastors, who now have just gone out. Matter of fact, their church had their first preview service this Sunday. So this is a church plant right now. Part of that is we've sent someone to plant churches in Brazil from our church. And why? Because here's what we did. On the very first Sunday of our church, we have two campuses now, but we met in a Regal Cinema, a movie theater. And so on the very first Sunday, we had, it's different places in the country. So when I talk about numbers in Tennessee, don't say, well, we couldn't, you know, I'm in Maine, and so I'm discouraged by that. Just thank God for your faithfulness in Maine. It would be different. I mean, Tennessee is not a particularly hard place to plant a church. You just put up a sign and 1,000 people come. Okay, that's a little exaggerated. But we had a couple hundred people at our first service. And on our first service, we said, welcome to Grace Church. The name of our church is Grace Church. Welcome to Grace Church. We're glad you're here. We've started this church. First paragraph. We're a church planting church, and we're going to be sending people out of this church to plant more churches. If you want to come be a part of that, man, we're excited that you're here. Now, we didn't spend a lot of time there because a lot of people weren't believers, and so but we wanted to signal early on this was central to our value, and so it was in the Antioch church. And so we want to model multiplication, right? So we want to model multiplication in our churches, in our lives, in every aspect of this. Now, let me give you an example. There's three things I do as a pastor. I preach 3 out of 4 Sundays. I lead a small group in my home, and I meet with the staff. And the reason I lead a small group in my home is I think it's essential to model that. You can't lead what you won't live. So I think it's essential to model being engaged in the community as a pastor, and I'm sort of now a motivational speaker living in a van down by the river, and so I want to make sure that I had a rootedness in my community. Well, here's the thing. I got to model multiplication there. So we've now gone through three generations of multiplication in 3 years out of our small group so that we might, and here's the deal. I mean, these are my neighbors, right? So I actually I focused on my eight neighbors who live within two houses of me. I've been in seven of eight of their homes to share the gospel with them, not just to invite them to church, but we know them well enough to share the gospel. I've had the privilege of leading two of the families to Christ, and in our tradition, we baptize people after conversion. So in baptizing four of the adults and two of the homes on journey, considering the claims of the gospel. So why do I tell you all that? Because I tell my church that. Here's why I tell my church that. I want my church, and then my neighbors are right there. So I'm like, when I'm talking, you know, she's right there and he's right there. Why? Because I want my church to hear that multiplication of disciples and groups is such a core value in my life that I prioritize it, and I want them to prioritize it. If you can't model it, you won't become a reproducing church. And part of the challenge is that we've kind of adopted or inherited models of church that are not particularly reproducing. They're barely just surviving. And I think therein is the difficulty, and you've got to break out of that mold. You say, well, I still got this church, and I've got to get it to survive. Yes, you do, but you have to carve out time and space in your life to multiply disciples and groups. And to do that, you probably need to spend more time with two groups of people as a pastor. You need to probably spend more time with leaders and the lost. So those are the two groups of people that you probably spend, developing leaders who multiply, and spending time with lost people who you have the opportunity, the privilege to evangelize. Now, I get that there's a whole lot of people who got a whole lot of other things for you to do. I get that. I hear that. I understand that there are things you have to do, but there are things you need to quit doing so you can do the things that God has called you to do. You say, Ed, well, people will get mad at me. Listen, if you went into pastoral ministry so people wouldn't get mad at you, you have chosen very poorly. If you want everyone to like you, don't be a pastor. Go sell ice cream. Because everybody likes the ice cream man, right? So the ice cream woman. So go do that. But what I'm saying to you is you have to bring a culture of multiplication in established churches. And I even in the introduction, most of you are in established churches. So I'm addressing there with established churches. We got to model multiplication in your new church as well, even when it is costly. Now, so here's my exhortation for the new churches. You got to be born pregnant. You got to be born pregnant. And that's a strange phrase. I must confess, it's actually from Star Trek, and I know I just kind of losered up the whole room there, and I apologize for that. But there's this episode of Star Trek, it's the most popular episode of all time in Star Trek. Anybody know that episode? No one's going to admit it. Thank you. Trouble with Tribbles. Join me in nerddom. Trouble with Tribbles, written by David Gerald. The fact that I know that is deeply disconcerting. I know the air date, too, but I'm going to skip that. But in that episode, these little creatures were taking over the Enterprise and actually saving a planet from the Klingons. And they couldn't get them to stop. They just kept showing up everywhere, reproducing. So finally, the doctor, Dr. McCoy, came in and explained why. He says, they're born pregnant. All you got to do is feed them, and they reproduce. But here's the deal. I want people to say that of churches. I want people to say what the Jewish leaders said of the Christians in the book of Acts. These men who have turned over upside down the world have come here also. Why? Because all we got to do is, as we grow, we have a passion for multiplication as well. Now, I want you to know, I get that that will mean that in some ways your church is not the first one to hit 1,000. Okay? It might slow down your growth. But I just saw Bob Roberts, my dear friend Bob, a few minutes ago from Northwood Church. And I know that his church runs about 3,000. I have the privilege of preaching there. But I know that in 5 miles of his church, the people who are in churches that have been planted from that church add up to about 20,000. And I think Jesus is pretty happy with Bob. And so what I want you to hear is that your church can value that from the beginning. So if we're going to see a multiplication movement, we have to put positive peer pressure on one another that when we plant churches, they will actually plant churches that plant churches that plant churches. And if we don't do that, what we'll continue to do is create established congregations that turn into Jerusalem rather than stay focused as Antioch. How do we do that? Well, we gotta give permission. Let's spend some time talking about giving permission. Now, I talked already about Methodists and Baptists and Pentecostals in the Vineyard. right? And I love all of them. I love the church. I love the Vineyard so much that my cell phone is actually called Wimber. John Wimber prayed for me. I love John Wimber. And so my wireless network at home and my cellular network here is called Wimber. So you can steal my Wi-Fi if you go to Wimber and see that. Because I want to walk in the power of the Spirit like John Wimber walked in the power of the Spirit. And I don't know what that has to do with Wi-Fi, but it made sense to me at the time. Now, how do we get there? Here's why. Okay, so before 1795, there were three dominant religious players in the American context. They were the Anglicans. They later changed their name to the Episcopalians after the American Revolution. Anglicans sounded too British. There were the Presbyterians, and there were the Congregationalists. Those were the power, religious power brokers on the East Coast. About 50 years later, they had all drastically declined. You might want to read Fink and Stark's book, The Churching of America, Winners and Losers in America's Religious Economy. Kind of a sociologist looks at these trends. He's at Baylor now. So what happened? Here's what happened. An Anglican bishop, an Episcopal bishop, was asked once a Baptist up in the Northeast. Some of the Baptists founded Brown University and some other schools up in the Northeast. Said, how is it that you Baptists are growing so much on the frontier? Now remember, the frontier was Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. So it's the Western frontier then was not that West. But they said, how is it you, the Anglican bishop asked the method of the Baptist, how is it you guys are growing so much on the frontier? And he said this, well, we don't wait to ask for permission to start churches. And I think this is a key issue. The Pentecostals didn't wait to ask for permission in the 1920s, right? The Methodists didn't wait for permission to plant churches in 1800. The Vineyard didn't ask for permission. I was talking to Johnny Crisp, who's the pastor of the Atlanta Vineyard, who's planted more than 24 churches out of their churches. I said, Johnny, how'd you end up planting a church in Atlanta? He said, well, I met John Wimber, and he said, well, you're kind of successful in business. You seem to be an entrepreneur. Why don't you plant a church? Which is fascinating that two-sentence description was the qualification for a church planter. You seem to be good at business. You seem to be an entrepreneur. But it's more than that. Wimber would say, I saw the move of the Spirit in him. I saw how God was working in this person. And so I sent him out. So he goes and plants the Atlanta Vineyard. Why? Because no one told him he couldn't. And part of the problem is we got a whole lot of structures and systems who think it's their job to say that you can't. Now, I love denominations, don't misunderstand. But, and I know we talked about this at your meeting in Texas, and I know that Lutherans have a different polity and there's an office and things of that sort. But in Ethiopia, the Lutherans are doing it very differently than the Lutherans in America, and they're getting it done in Ethiopia while we're watching them and kind of wagging our fingers from St. Louis. Anyway, that's another story. So my point is this. We have to find a way to give permission and then to come alongside people who have taken that step of faith. You say, well, Ed, that doesn't fit you. You have two doctorates. You're a missiologist. You write books. I mean, you just planted a church because you could do, well, here's the deal. I was reminded of this week when I was up in Erie. I planted a church in Buffalo, New York, in Erie, Pennsylvania. When I went to Buffalo, New York, I was 21 years of age. I graduated from college with a degree in biology and chemistry. I took two religion courses at my nominally Christian college. I felt God called me to be a church planner. I applied. My denomination turned me down to be a church planner. I would later become the person in my denomination who turns down people. I was much nicer than they were to me. But God called us to plant a church, Donna and I, and we began to pray and say, well, Lord, what are we going to do? Now, I recognize that my denomination is different than some of yours, and I'm not calling you to abandon your denomination and its polity. But in my denomination, we sort of do local church ordination. So if you hear somebody's ordained, just keep in mind, it doesn't mean the same thing in all denominations. In my denomination, you can ordain a houseplant. And so if you hear someone got ordained, that doesn't mean much. But some church ordained me, and we moved up to the inner city of Buffalo, New York. I got an insulation job. I'd blow an insulation all day, running a crew on an insulation truck. I was driving to Pittsburgh on the weekend to go to seminary. Donna was teaching school in the public school system in Buffalo, and we planted a church because Jesus told us to, even though our denomination told us not to. Now, what was beautiful about that, and I know that's, later, I became the guy in charge of that in a delightful twist of irony. But let me say that what happened was I would have probably turned me down. 21 years of age, no seminary, no college, no nothing. But what my denomination did well, they turned me down for funding, but in my denominational polity, you still can go. What they did well is they came alongside me on the field. And the church that we 28 years ago is still there on the west side of Buffalo. It's now a predominantly Hmong congregation, as the people groups often rapidly turn over in the inner city context in cities like Buffalo, New York. So what I'm saying to you is we need to recognize that we have to find ways to give permission and sometimes to join with people in how Jesus has already led them to do these things. Finding structures to do that. And let me just say, too, we've got to recognize that cultural permission and organizational permission are not necessarily the same thing. Okay, so again, I apologize for picking on the Lutherans. There's two of you, but none of us would be here if a guy didn't nail something to a door 500 years ago in Germany. And so we appreciate that. Well, maybe there might be some people here who are not in that trend. They're not Protestants, I don't know. But let me say that there's permission in Lutheranism. You know, it's called the SMP, Specific Ministry Pastor. But the problem is, culturally, that's not valued. Now, there are places, and again, once you have permission, you got to go through that, and you got to value that. But we have to find ways to value the kinds of church plants that sometimes people have seen as unqualified, but biblically they are deeply qualified. When you send out church planting teams, you send out men and women who have been equipped, who are ready to lead, that you've prayed for, you laid hands on, you send teams together for the glory of God and the events of His kingdom, they may not look like you when they went out because they didn't go through the same system you went through. And you know what? That's okay. There's a guy named Roland Allen. He's an Anglican. There are no Anglicans here today. I'm kind of disappointed there were no Anglicans. But Roland Allen wrote several books. The titles, back then titles, like I wrote a book called Viral Churches. What does that mean? Churches with a cold? But back then the titles said everything. Listen to the titles of Roland Allen's book, who is an Anglican. That means they have a very high view of the clergy and a very specific process to be a clergy. I remember the clergy. Here's the titles of his books. Missionary Methods, St. Paul's or Ours? We looked at the New Testament and how they did that. Here's another one. The titles, they're just so catchy. The Spontaneous Expansion of the Church and the Causes that Hinder It. And his other book was, and subtle, huh? And his other book was written more. His other book was The Case for Voluntary Clergy. Well, he was a missionary. And as a missionary, if I recall, in the Shantung province of China, he put forth some of these ideas that didn't catch on in his lifetime but came later. And I think if we're going to see a multiplication movement, we're going to have to open more lanes. Let me explain what I mean by open more lanes. I really work hard not to go to Walmart, but occasionally a crisis calls for a trip to Walmart. And I've always wanted to be like on the website, the People of Walmart. If you've ever seen that, it's a great fun website. But sometimes I feel guilty looking at it. Sometimes it makes fun of people, and we shouldn't make fun of people. That's bad unless they're at our church. So whenever I go to Walmart, the reason I avoid it, my Walmart is a super Walmart, which means it's worse than a normal Walmart. So there are like 24 lanes here in my Walmart, 24 lanes. There's like one lane open with 50 people in it, right? It just, winds around. Except for the check yourself out lane, which I've tried, and it never works. I always go back, it doesn't work. So here's the deal. I think if we're going to get to movements in North America, I want you to know this. I do a lot of work with denominations. I work with most of your denominations at some level. We're out of money. I mean, we get new money each year, but we're never going to have enough. You can't buy your way into a church multiplication movement. Okay, some are investing resources. You know, the Evangelical Free Church, it's more of a district level, but they ran out of money at the national level. Converge Worldwide has just never been a heavy funder at the national level. The PCUSA financially just didn't have the resources to do that. So how might we redirect some funds? Some have tried, right? So some have got to actually up their funding through the Church Multiplication Network. The Southern Baptists have made a major retooling of focus. And so there's some more in different places, but here's the thing I want you to hear. We're not going to buy our way with professional clergy into a church multiplication movement. Say, do you not believe in seminary grads? Listen, I have 4 seminary degrees, 2 master's, 2 doctorates. I believe, I'm on faculty of 3 seminaries. I believe in theological education. I just sometimes say that because I get at these meetings and say, well, I heard that Ed Stetson doesn't believe in theological education. Listen, I just took over a new role that's connected to now Wheaton and the Billy Graham Center there. And I love theological education. But what I'm saying to you is we've got to find a way to open more lanes than the go-to-seminary-via-church-planner lane. And what are some of those lanes? Or we'll talk about those in just a minute. Lastly, we've got to overcome fear. What is some fear? Well, we might be ill-prepared. Well, I don't know a lot of people that go into church planning that are particularly well-prepared. It's not what you think. Let me give you an example. I did a study. This was actually my PhD dissertation. I compared 602 church planners I did a four-year kind of look at their progress. And I took all of my church planters were seminary graduates with MDivs, MDiv requirements. So I had 602 church planters with MDivs. And I did a whole bunch of research on them, so I won't go into all that. But I compared different variables. One of the variables was this. Did you go to a three-day boot camp, which is my denomination at the time, had a very specific three-day boot camp. And so about half the church planters went to 3 years of seminary and went to a three-day boot camp, and half the church planters went to 3 years of seminary and did not go to a three-day boot camp. And depending on whether they went to a three-day boot camp, after 3 years of seminary, 1,000 days of seminary, the difference a three-day boot camp made was the doubled in attendance after 4 years, those who went compared to those who didn't go. Now, that says might tell you something about theological education. But I actually think it reminds us that church planting is such a unique area of ministry that it requires a different kind of training. And you offer that training to people who didn't go to seminary, who did go to seminary. And I'm a big believer in seminary. You just might have to give them seminary in place. That's what I did. Earned my MDiv, living in Buffalo, driving to Pittsburgh every weekend, sleeping on the floor of an office building to get an MDiv. Well, that sounded like an old man. And I did it uphill in the snow, both ways, without shoes in 1922. No, it wasn't. I graduated in the 90s. So we got to overcome fear that not having this track will actually cause harm in the long run. You say, well, Ed, if they don't have theological education, they could lead to theological error. Can I just tell you, we've got about 2,000 years of history that whether you get theological education or not, theological error is going to be there. And the issue is, how do we correct it? Anybody who thinks that theological education rules out theological error has not actually participated in theological education. Or looked at the state of the U.S. church, or church beyond that. So we need all different kinds of churches, right? So I'm going to show a quick picture of my church that I planted 20 years ago. It was just fun to see it Sunday. I'll do that in the main session. So we need churches like the one I planted, or the one I planted now, but we also need more of these, right? So if we're going to get to movement, we're going to need, go to the next slide, Daniel. We're going to need more churches like bivocational church plants. There's no way we're going to get to a church multiplication movement with vocational clergy. No way in the world. And some of you means it's going to have to break the way, some of the way you do things. You know about the story of the LCMS Lutheran guy. In LCMS Lutheranism, you go to a Concordia, and at the end of your 3 years, they actually have a graduation. Well, it's not just a graduation, but they actually read off where you are going to go. You don't pick. So you might be there, and it says, Point Barrow, Alaska. So you went 3 years of seminary, and you've been exiled forever. For the glory of God and the preaching of law and gospel. That's for the Lutherans. But there are two guys in the LCMS district in Texas who said, went through their Concordia and said, man, we don't want to really do that. We don't want a job. We don't want you to pay us. We want to move to Austin, Texas. We want to get jobs at Home Depot. And we want to plant a missional incarnational church on this. I think it was the south side of Austin. And we just want to evangelize and disciple it into existence. And people said, well, there's no category for that. If there's no category for that, we need some new categories. But the reality is what they have set, and they did make space and room, what they have set in a formal way, most of us have in an informal way, is bivocational is bad because you couldn't get a real church. Bivocational is bad because you couldn't get funding to plant the church. What I want to say to you is bivocationalism is not a penalty. Bivocationalism is an opportunity if we're going to see a church multiplication movement. Bivocational is not a penalty. Bivocationalism is an opportunity if we're going to see a church multiplication movement. Who wrote, was it Hugh Halter's new book, Bibo? I think that might be it. Anybody know if that's the new book? No, everyone's looking around. Yeah, okay, and it's called Bibo. And so let me get that book. Also, Steve Shogren wrote a book, Creating Communities for the Kingdom, talks a lot about bivocational ministry in a very positive and helpful way. We're going to need more language churches. Let me say that this should be self-evident, but even in Southern California, this room will be, and the room there later, which would be much better than Exponential East, but the room will be disproportionately Anglo, not overwhelmingly, but disproportionately the culture as a whole where we are, but also it will actually be disproportionately English-speaking. And I say, well, yeah, of course it is. It's an English-speaking conference. But can I just tell you that when we compare what God is doing among ethno-linguistic people groups who don't speak English to what he's doing among English speakers, God is working in powerful, powerful ways that we need to celebrate. We need to be very careful that we don't ruin it by thinking we can help it. You know, hey, I'm from the denomination. I'm from the mother church. I'm here to help. But we need to recognize, and you know this, by depending on who's counting, by 2042, there'll be no majority in the U.S. In the public schools, there's already no majority. In California, it's a different situation altogether. I know you're not all from California, so I'll stick with the U.S. So we need more language church plants. We need more storefront church plants. We need, and those get looked down on sometimes in our church multiplication movement. That's unhelpful. Listen, let's be thankful for people who are setting up storefronts and bless them and pray for them. We need more lay-initiated church plants. This is going to be a key place for many of you to say, well, we don't have a pastor in this place. Well, let's get some lay people to begin a church. That's what the Methodists did on the Western frontier. Because of their view of the clergy, they thought they needed a member of the clergy to come around and sort of oversee the churches. And so they started these classes, and all these little Methodist classes sprung up all across the frontier, and they created a system where the pastor would go to all those churches. That system is called the circuit rider. Well, we can do that today in a lot easier ways. We got technology that can make that happen. House churches. Long Beach is sort of someone mentioned Long Beach. I think that was you. Was it you, Long Beach? No. Oh, you, Long Beach. You know, I sat in Neil Cole's house just recently. He and Alan Hirsch and out of that house has launched a lot of house churches, and I'm thankful for that. Now, I recognize, you know, that a lot of house churches, not all, but a lot of house churches, and some of us have had bad experiences with some house churches that can be kind of fringy. I've had a lot of experiences with house churches that are sort of the angry white children of evangelical megachurches, who you're laughing because you've seen that as well. Some of you are laughing too much. But there are missional expressions. I think of what God's doing at the University of Texas Austin. I'm thankful for what God's doing through Neil Cole, through the organic church movement. There are healthy expressions that are on mission that will be able to plant churches in places and among ways that we can't. Missional incarnational communities are going to be ways that churches are going to be planted that are going to be evangelized through making relationships into existence. I will tell you, every church I planted, depending how you count, I planted six churches. All of them began with a grand opening. Missional incarnational communities can do that, but often just begin the relationships, disciple-making relationships, lead to community. We have a PCUSA church right where I live in Tennessee, which is just strange to me. A new creation. You'll have to check it and look it up. New Creation Church, and they have they basically just built relationships, family, built some wonderful relationships. Actually, it's funny because people would say to them, well, you know, Grace Church just started. Why are you starting this? Oh, yeah, we know. We're not doing anything like that. And they're very nice about it, and some of our staff knew them. We got to talk to them. But they just built relationships, evangelized some people, shared the gospel was shared, people trusted and responded, and now they have a missional incarnational community that meets in a storefront, kind of a coffee shop, and it's a beautiful thing what they're doing. So, if we're going to get there, we're going to need to shape culture. And my time's running out rapidly. And as I mentioned, I'm going to kind of zip out real quickly just because I got to go do my main stage session. But I'll be around for questions later at our newchurches.com booth if you want to talk afterwards. But the key, I think, is we've got to shape culture. A lot of times we're talking about missional today. We need to define missional well. If you define missional outside of a function of the church or exclude the church from a missional definition because your kingdom definition is a big kingdom definition, I think you got a hard time explaining how when Jesus commissioned his disciples, their response was to go plant churches. So you say, well, church planting is not, there's no command to plant churches, there's not. But upon hearing the commissions of Jesus, the disciples, understanding Jesus' mission, went out and planted churches. So to not make the assumption, you say, well, that's an assumption. Yeah, I also assume the Trinity is real, even though the word Trinity is not used in the Bible, but it's clearly described. And people clearly responded. So people clearly responded. So if we're going to define missional well, we need to recognize that Ephesians 3:10 says God has chosen the church to make known his manifold wisdom. So as you stand before your church, say, we're going to be on mission. I want you to show the love of Jesus to the hurting, but I want you to share the love of Jesus to the lost. And you do that through church planting. Among other things, through church planting. You say, well, Ed, we just want to do good. I want you to do good. There's a very famous quote. You know, since Pope Francis was just here, I was waiting for him to call. He didn't call. I was kind of disappointed. I thought we'd get together. I was going to share some thoughts with him. I had 95 of them. But we didn't get to hang. But everyone's been putting St. Francis on their Facebook page lately. They're putting the St. Francis quote. It says, preach the gospel at all times. When necessary, use words. There's only two problems with that. Number one, he never said it, so there's that. Remember the words of Abraham Lincoln, don't believe all those quotes attributed to me on the internet. But also, too, it's really bad theology. Listen, let's show the love of Jesus, because the love of Jesus warrants a showing. because Jesus came into a broken world serving the hurting. Luke 4, he announces and inaugurates his public ministry, citing Isaiah, talking about the poor, the hurting, and the marginalized. But let's not think because we need more of that, and we do, that we don't need also more of the gospel proclamation. Necessity of the gospel proclamation. Evangelization leads to congregationalizing. We need churches to be planted that are evangelistic by their very nature. So plant by multiplication and not by funding. Shape a culture that your church, so as I look at a church like People's Church, or I look at a denomination like the CMNA or of CMNA and others, what I want to exhort is we've got to rally our churches to get skin in the game to plant churches. Right? So, and I will tell you, it's hard for us. We talk about that at our church. You know, we're about 3 years old, and one of our key leaders, we had gone through, I led what's called a pastoral apprentice team. I had three pastoral apprentices I spent a year with. I said I did three things. I guess I do four, but we had lunch every other week, and we worked on messages. I talked about how to preach and how to plant, and one of them was one of our sharpest guys, and some families in our church, and then one of our staff sent this call to go be part of a church plant, so we sent him out, and then we anyone who goes out of our church, we give them a fishing license. We basically say, you can get anyone in our church to go with you, you can take them. Anyone in our church to go with you, you can take them. I usually announce it on a Sunday morning, say, if you want to go, you should go with them, and then I call all the key tithers and say bad things about the church planner. Is that bad? I don't know. But I give them a fishing license. And I will tell you that when John and Amy Mills came to us, who at that time was serving as the key leader, campus pastor for our Hendersonville campus, and said, I believe God's calling me to join Jess and be the co-pastor and plant this church about an hour away from us. And not only that, I think we're going to take some people with us. It always tests that. But you know, it's a beautiful thing. You say, well, Ed, it's too soon for my church. Listen, I've had three daughters, right? So you can know I'm blessed, but you can also know you need to pray for me. And I got to tell you, we were never at a time when we just had enough money and enough margin in our lives. Let's have another kid. And you're never going to get there as a church. So the key is, don't wait till the money's there. Wait till the Spirit moves, and then respond in obedience. And so that's what we sought to do. It's not always easy. But you can build this in the DNA of your church. I preached this summer at Summit Church. J.D. Greer is one of the other speakers at this meeting. And right before I preached, they showed a video of their, I think it was seven church planters. And they actually showed, we're going to go here, they're going to be here 9 months, and we need some of you to go find jobs in these cities and join them and go plant churches. That's creating a culture that's not driven by funding, but it's driven by a cult application. That requires us to focus on kingdom, not just church. But to focus on kingdom and not just church. Because why? Because ultimately, it's we don't just want to focus on our church, but on the advance of the kingdom of God, which includes, in part at least, and a key part at least, the planting of churches that plant churches. I'll end the PowerPoint there. Let me just give some closing thoughts. And then, like I said, Daniel, can you do a favor? We're done with the PowerPoint. So come on up here so people can see you too. Daniel and I have partnered together in this church planning endeavor. We're launching newchurches.com. Daniel has planted churches and campuses in three countries. He's Canadian, which is where all the godly people are from. You and my wife. I want to encourage you. We're doing a track. And Daniel's going to be sharing on trends in residencies, how I mentioned what Summit Church is doing. We're going to be sharing on trends in residencies, on collaboration, on strategies of funding. And so tomorrow morning at 8:45 is the next workshop on the trends in church multiplication, led by none other than Daniel M. But he's going to be around to answer any questions too. But we've launched this thing called newchurches.com together. You can sign up. It's all free. There's stuff to download there, the church planning report and other things as well. You look like you want to say something before I close. Okay. I was actually kind of thinking you'd go over there, not right there. It's kind of freaking me out. No, that's really freaking me out. All right. So let me give just a closing word of exhortation. After I was with the church I founded 20 years ago this week, Don and I both went. And we just came back burdened about two things. Number one, oh, it's a beautiful thing to see. I was there for 3 years. My ADD kicks in at that point, and I suddenly get called somewhere else. Some of you are like, amen, I can relate to you. But when I went there and I visited with the church and then the daughter church and the daughter church and the daughter church, and the pastor who succeeded me was my executive pastor, and he's been there now 18 years. And they planted churches and they sent out missionaries. And I thought to myself, if I could do it all over again, I would want to continue to point a church that would model multiplication over decades, sending out people and sending out churches over and over again. So what I want to say to you is, as you go and plant, or if you have an established church or you're trying to transition to this kind of thing, there's a cultural shift that's required. But ultimately, what you will find is when people begin to get this culture, they turn outward rather than inward. And I just want you to know that you don't want to pastor a church for 20 years with a bunch of inward people who are knowledgeable religious people, not living on mission, looking for your steps, and just sort of not on this journey together. But if you can plant the kind of church that's on mission for the name and fame of Jesus, and part of that mission, not the totality of it, but is a strong focus on multiplication, you will actually plant a church that's not about itself. And the first five words of the best-selling hardcover book in the history of the English language is, it's not about you. But it's not about you. So if that's the case, if it's not about you and it's not about me, one way that we can make it not about us is by sending away and by giving away, and in doing so, shape a culture that has different kinds of models in churches where we've given permission that ultimately we multiply everything. I want to pray for you. I want to pray for this track, for Daniel and others will be in this track, and then we'll be dismissed. Like I said, I'm going to slip out real quick, but I'll be around after the next session by our booth. Where's our booth?
It's right in front of the main doors.
Right in front of the main doors over there, right by the baptismal tank. Yeah. Baptismal tank. I'll explain that to you guys later, to the Lutherans. It's in the New Testament. a joke. I love you. You know. Let's pray. Father, thank you that you have redeemed us and called us by name and sent us on a mission for your name's sake. I pray that you would receive due glory in the church as the church, as we make it less about ourselves, more about your mission and your mission that includes multiplication. May you receive the glory and may your name and fame be more widely known. In Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.